Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
So I can see better. Okay, so today we're going to talk about childhood disorders. Probably finish it off. So we might get into trauma and other more sort of adult disorders, if you want to call them that. Today, one of the ones, the first one we'll talk about, is dyslexia. Dyslexia is an interesting disorder. Part of the thing about dyslexia is it's a reading problem, right? It's not just, we have this idea that dyslexic people just see letters backwards, right? And though that does happen, that's reported, it isn't just that. It's trouble putting sentences together, understanding meanings of words, and you can actually talk to a dyslexic. It's not a problem. In fact, I would almost guarantee there's someone in the room with dyslexia. And if not, there's at least someone in here that knows somebody. And you can have perfectly reasonable conversations with dyslexic. Well, it's not like they don't understand spoken language. It's the written word they have trouble with. When I say it seems to have a genetic cause, what I'm saying is that it runs in families. I'm saying that if your twin is a dyslexic, you're more likely to be one as well. An identical twin much more than a fraternal twin. So homozygotic versus heterozygotic twins. Monozygotic and dizygotic twins. This kind of thing. I mean, clearly there's going to be a genetic angle to pretty much everything. But we know it seems to run in families. One of the interesting things psychologically that dyslexic people have is slower flicker fusion. Flicker fusion is, best way to describe it is when something flickers on and off, at some point, if it's got a high enough frequency, we don't see flicker. Right? So these lights in here, but there's these lights in a bad idea. Let's go with the bulb in this projector because it's an incandescent bulb. It'll flicker. It's flickering at 60 cycles per second. Okay? Because of the frequency of our electricity, which is 60 hertz. So in fact, this thing's going on and off 60 times a second. We typically don't notice that. In fact, 60 is above everybody's flicker fusion threshold, so we're okay. This is how television works. There actually aren't real people living inside that box. Old-time TVs draw 30 lines. First they draw the odd lines, then they draw the even lines every second, 30 lines and 30 lines. Okay, that's called interlacing. Newer TVs draw all the lines at once. That's the P when you hear 720p, 1020p. That's progressive scanning. And if you think about something like, you get a 1080i signal, if you've looked at that, or a 720i signal, you don't notice flicker. When we watch movies, we don't see every single, 24 frames a second. 24 frames, we see smooth movement, right? What happens with dyslexic people, there's a lot of data that suggests that they have a slower flicker fusion rate. So, things that are flickering that we non-dyslexic people would see as not flickering, they see as flickering. Now, typically this wouldn't be a problem living on the savannah of Africa 200,000 years ago, because they didn't have YouTube back then. Right? They didn't have interlaced signals, they didn't have electricity that flickered, and they also didn't have writing. Writing is a pretty recent human invention. So, this seems to be, what does that have to do with it? I don't really know. I don't know if that's the cause of it, or that's all that's connected to things like the magnocellular deficit problems that look like they're there in what's called the red nucleus, which connects information from cerebellum to and visual areas. Same thing with the planum temporale. Planum temporale is symmetrical in dyslexic people. Planum temporale is right near its near sort of between occipital lobe and varicose area. Oh, gee, that makes a great deal of sense now, doesn't it? And in non-dyslexics, it is asymmetrical. In other words, the left planum temporale is bigger than the right. Left language, so it all kind of follows. In dyslexic folks, it's the same size. They have a smaller one on the left. It's the same size as their right. That said, that's kind of controversial now. More recent research has come out saying that it looks like it might have been the way this was measured. So it might have been an artifact of the measurement. But this has been talked about for a long time, so I'm going to say that I'm pretty confident this is a real difference. See, this is interesting because this is a disorder, and it clearly is a disorder, and anybody here who's dyslexic knows it's a disorder. But the interesting thing here is that this would never have shown up until human writing was invented. Right? It wasn't a problem until people started writing. It's cool that we actually use varicose area when we're looking at writing. Our brain ends up getting hooked up that way. But until we invented writing, the oldest written in the script is what? 6,000 years old, maybe? Maybe 8,000 years old? Okay. That's not enough time for evolution to do anything with 15 or 20 year generations. It just isn't enough time. So this just wasn't a problem. There's a lot of interesting neurological disorders that probably weren't problems on the savannah. Today we call them disorders, and I think it's fair to call them that, but they were never a big problem. So why is this pretty pervasive? A lot of people have dyslexia. It's just because it was no big deal for a long time. And of course, nowadays we know how to deal with it. People get extra time to write tests, etc., etc. Right? On the other hand, we can talk about what's called nonverbal learning disability. It's sort of the opposite of dyslexia, and I mean neurologically the opposite. I don't mean that it is actually the opposite. Because this is about spatial and mathematical ability, typically. And this looks like it might have something to do with integration of information. So trying to put stuff together. And of course, things that are spatial are all about putting stuff together, aren't they? Right? This seems to be typically differences show up in the right hemisphere, typically right where you would expect in parietal regions. The problem here, unlike dyslexia, which is pretty much the symptoms are the same with every dyslexia, nonverbal learning disability is something that is a little broader. Let's say that. Okay, so not everybody's nonverbal learning disability looks the same. So we see different differences in the right parietal areas for different people. But this stuff seems to show up in right parietal. This makes sense. Because that's integrating spatial information. That's vision for action, things like that. This also tells you that it's right, because people that have nonverbal learning disability, they talk a lot. They speak like anybody, it's no problem. And I had a student a few years ago that had this. And this person could talk just fine. It's no problem. Writing a paper was a real chore for this person. The person, by the way, has an honors degree in psychology and did his or her thesis with me. See those little things, the anonymity? That's called professional ethics. So this person certainly can talk a lot. I didn't ever notice this in this person, but this is an N of one. The social aspects of language, in other words, looking at the emotional content, the intent of language, is a little harder. So there is a linguistic angle here, but that makes sense. If it's right hemisphere, we know that a right hemisphere lesion, for example, quite often can lead to misunderstanding of things like of intent, of emotion, of sarcasm, or doghouse tubing. had a diagnosed learning disability, basically what happens is you're looking at an IQ test. Okay? So I give you an IQ test, and they have subscales. And the classic two subscales, there's many more, are a verbal scale and a performance scale. There's a bunch of others, and there are sub-subscales. But if I see that your IQ is at, you know, you end up scoring in the normal range, but then your verbal subscale is at 70, but everything else is fine, something's wrong. Same sort of thing if I look at your performance subscale, look at your math ability or your digit span or something like that. I mean, this is going to sound crass, but if all your scores are low, we call you not very smart. Right? But if one set of scores is low and everything else is high, it's like, that's just weird. Something is odd. Something odd is going on here. So that's typically what happens. So if you've ever been diagnosed as having some sort of learning disability, typically you've been given an IQ test as a first pass. They give you an IQ test, and then they tell you, this is what happened with this person that we're talking about. They gave this person, boy, it's hard to not say him or her. They gave this person an IQ test, and he or she came to me and showed me the results, and I went, oh boy, wow, how did you pass statistics? Because you got like a 65 IQ level in math. Everything else, you're fine. That's this person said, I know. I said, yeah, you've got, I'm not that kind of psychologist, but I can tell you, you got this. Right? And everything turned out fine after that, once this person knew this. And everybody notices, I said, the social angle of language thing in this person. But again, that's another point. Why should we put this down?
Dave?
Yeah, please.
Going back to the nonverbal learning. So exactly what do these people have difficulties with?
Typically math, spatial things, music, anything you'd expect that would be right hemisphere dependent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's why I said it's different than dyslexia, where while what the problem is in dyslexia is a little bit different for everybody, almost all dyslexics now and then reverse a letter, right? Or have trouble understanding grammar and you know, verbalizing grammar. They understand, implicitly understand grammar, they just can't write it down properly or read it properly. Right.
Maybe this is a question.
Other questions? Okay, let's talk about pervasive developmental disorders. The biggest part of this category is autism. Autistic people typically have poor, if any, linguistic development. Now, we can include in here, autism is a spectrum disorder, like a lot of neurological disorders. So autism is a spectrum disorder, meaning that there are people that are profoundly retarded and autistic. And there are people that are completely normal and you would never, well, if you know autistic people, you know you can spot them. As a former student of mine came to me one day, and this person, I can say he, he knows this story, so this isn't a bad thing to say. He came to me and he handed me the special needs form and I said, yeah, I know. He said, I've asked him. He says, you know, I know. He said, how do you know? I said, my son has autism. I said, you know, you're not going to take, you don't take this the wrong way. You guys got a book. He says, I suppose we do. So Asperger's is part of the autism spectrum. The new DSM, the DSM-5, when it comes out, will almost certainly remove the diagnosis of Asperger's, and it'll all become part of the autism spectrum. Okay? So typically we see poor, if any, linguistic development. That's not what we see in people that have the Asperger's type of ASD, autism spectrum disorders. In fact, people with Asperger's very often read very early. They have what's called hyperlexia. We even do see this in other autistic people. That's my son. That's a long time ago. That's my, at the time, 3-year-old son, John. He was able to read words on sight very young. I don't think he knew what they meant, but he was able to read words on sight. One of the big problems autistic people have is joint attention. And this includes the Asperger subtype. Trying to attend, we talk about joint attention when I talk about many kinds of attention, attend to more things than one thing at a time. Now, we all have to do that now and then. Right? We all have to do that. One of the things that people talk about is, and I got a question mark there, is called autistic aloneness. The social angle of autism is a difficult thing because autistic people don't understand, more or less, don't understand. You know, I'm not going to worry about offending anybody. My boy has autism. So if you think it's offensive what I said about autistic people, screw you. The idea of having trouble with society, with others, understanding emotions, understanding how other people behave with each other, right? So understanding facial expressions, understanding intent in voice, right? One of the things my son now, who's now almost 10, often says to me, he says, "What feeling do you have?" He's learned that he should ask that question. And he's able to recognize things. He says, "You're mad at me." It's like, "Yeah, I'm not mad. I yelled at you to get your attention." Sometimes I'll say, "No, I was pretty mad at you." So for the rest of us, that's trivial. We recognize facial expressions. It's easy. So you see, the thing is, when you got a baby who's autistic, they're not going to show you things like, they're not going to look in your eye. They're not going to respond to a smile the same way you would expect. And what happens then is they end up being alone. And more people are coming around to this idea that it's not that they want to be alone or they're happy alone. In fact, when you ask autistic people that are verbal, do they want to be alone? The very typical answer is no, but I don't know how to keep friends. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And for the rest of us, that's trivial. We just do it. We just do it. It happens. Right? But for someone who has autism, and this includes the Asperger subtype, they have to be taught how to behave with other people. I have to say to my son, "No, see, this is how the humans behave." You know? Don't yell in the restaurant. Why? Because it's, do you see anybody else yelling? No. Well, that should tell you something. Don't behave that way. And he always says, "Oh, I'm so sorry." He's learned to say "so sorry." The thing is, sometimes he's so sorry about things like, I get up and I see these. And there's like, he's climbed up onto the counter, gone up into the cupboard where we used to hide the chips because we didn't get up there, but he's, you know, he could do it. There's chips all over the floor. "Did you eat chips?" "No." "Okay, who put these there?" Then he'll do this thing. "Did you do it?" "Yes." "I'm so sorry." "So no, you're not." "So you mean, you know, that wasn't an accident. You planned it out. You had to rappel up the side of the kitchen counter." So the idea of aloneness, actually, I question. Because I think that it's the reaction of other people and parents that then makes them alone. You'll see in a couple of videos I'm going to show you, there's only one in the presentation, but there's two more that I have I put in today, this morning, actually, that will show you that he actually is very social. You just have to learn how to interact with him. You'll see very young, especially, and sometimes forever, language that's just echolalia, which is really literally just repeating everything that's said. So sometimes you'll see that, quite often. So a lot of times people, parents of autistic kids will think, "Oh, my kid's not autistic, look, he talks." You say, "Yeah, he's repeating everything he's seeing on that TV screen." When you ask him a question, does he get to repeat your question back to you? That's not really talking. That's parroting, right? That's like a little. John did some of them. Neologisms you'll see sometimes as well, which is made up words. John has a friend who I won't name that's in his playgroup. He goes out with like 5 or 6 autistic kids every Saturday morning, and they do activities. It's pretty cool, actually. And there's one kid that's pretty severe, and he's also pretty clearly mentally retarded. Like, he's not, like, John is not, but this guy is. and basically has his own words with it. Right? He just says, he repeats strange phrases. Now, he might be trying to say something. Again, you don't really know. Right? There's very few things cuter than, and this guy's about 15, there's very few things cuter than watching Jonathan sit there and read him a book. It's really cool. Damn cool. Yes?
Does the echolalia, does that also go where like the kids will hear something on TV and because people have laughed, they'll repeat it and it seems like it's in the right context, but they really don't understand why they're saying it?
Yeah, I mean, that's typically what's happening with echolalia. They don't know what they're saying. Okay. Yeah. You'll see a lot of times with very young autistic kids that at night, when they're falling asleep, my son does this still, they'll be just talking and they're doing a whole TV show to themselves. You know?
Like this, like they're kind of sitting in the back seat of the car when they're whispering away, and when you happen to catch enough of what they're saying, they're actually reliving a moment of their day.
And, well, we don't know what they're doing. Well, but that, yeah, it seems like that, yeah. Yeah. Usually people that have that kind of level, you can't really communicate with them very easily. Right, you can, but it's quite difficult. With Jonathan, when he does that, I say, what are you talking about? He goes, nothing! And then he says things like, I'm embarrassed. It's like, you're embarrassed, it's who you are. pretend play typically in autistic kids is really abnormal. Now, you would have some people who would tell you, let him be free, he's just eccentric. Those people are called idiots. When you take a car and you use it not as a toy car, but you use it as something that you hit the wall with, now and then, that's just kind of fun. Right? Smash it into the wall. But I mean just like this, for hours. That's not playing. Right? You give the kid a doll and he uses it as a hammer, that's not playing. The pretend play is abnormal. Now, John's pretend play is completely normal. It wasn't for a long time. You'd give him stuff. I was trying to find the picture. One of the first things we noticed pretty early on, but one of the first times when it sort of struck me, like, okay, there might be something going on here, he had taken up chess pieces and lined them up short to tall. And that's strange. And in fact, you'll see kids looking for patterns like that.
How old was he when he did that?
2.5 ish. Right around there, between 2 and 3. By the way, don't feel any pressure about asking me questions about John. I'm clearly showing you pictures of him, and I'm going to show you 3 videos of him. It's not something that I'm embarrassed about.
Yeah,
he's
basically. Same, he yelled in the restaurant, right?
Yeah.
Now, did he learn after that to not yell in restaurants?
Yeah, because he
generalized the concept.
Well,
don't yell at the swimming pool, or don't yell.
Well, of course, don't in the swimming
pool. In the library.
Yeah, in the library, yeah. I mean, it's interesting how. Not like a lot of kids, and of course, part of this too is parsing apart how much of this is autism, how much of this is he's a 10-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, 10-year-old boys, they're nightmares.
They're loud, they're obnoxious.
They're loud, they're obnoxious, they wreck stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's that, right? But like he's learned, if you watch him in school, he's learned to sit still, sit at his desk, do his work, put his hand up to ask a question. He's learned all that stuff. And he doesn't yell in the library, he doesn't like gym. So he yells a lot apparently there, but then he goes and runs around. he's also learned, frankly, that he gets away with stuff. So, for example, what he's doing here, there's a sensory, a lot of times, so you talk about joint attention, if he's trying to attend to one thing, anything sensory sometimes it can be a sound or a visual stimulus. This is the sound of being in a Subway restaurant. John, for some reason, can't go into Subway. He's been like that for a very long time. He's like 2.5 there-ish, I guess, probably. Yeah, 2.5. Yeah, it's pretty good. And we are in, actually, Deer Lake, Newfoundland, there. And he's doing this. Now, this is when we started to, you know, have questions, because he'd get really upset. And then, you know, 3 years later, we go into one in Ottawa, and it's the same thing. It's probably the sound of that rotating, we were trying to guess what sounds the same, and it's the sound of maybe the bread oven thing that's rotating. I don't know. But he's covering up his ear. He's doing, you remember Rain Man?
Mm-hmm.
Doing that?
Mm-hmm.
What he's doing is he's making it so he can't hear. So he's pushing his, I don't know what that part of your earlobe's called, your ear's called, but he's pushing that in, and then he's putting his other ear on his shoulder so he doesn't hear anything. Right? That said, that's real, and he'll do that now, and he'll say, I don't like, and he'll explain to you what it is. Then we had no idea. If he'll ask me a question, he knows I'm going to say no, he'll do that, because it's like he's playing the autism card with me. So he'll say, he'll come home, he'll walk in, and he'll open the freezer, he'll say, can I have Southern-style chicken wings? Because you'll see a box of stuff. But I bought it for me to heat up at night when I want munchies. I don't want chips. I want, meat. So Timmy goes, can I have Southern-style chicken wings? It's like, don't do that. That's not going to get you anywhere. That's just not going to work. So don't play the autism card with me. He looks at it, walks away.
So that kind of attitude towards it obviously helps with John. He's got the mental capacity to understand that. But what about children who have autism that are lower mentally?
Yeah, you have to basically not give in to them. And then you reward good behavior. I mean, the thing that works with this is IBI, intensive behavioral intervention, which is basically using operant conditioning techniques. And we do some of that, but not a great deal.
Yeah.
The book says it's like 20 per 100,000. It's more like about 20 per 300. And it's a little lower than that probably now. It's something around, somewhere between 1 in 100 and 1 in 150 kids are autistic. Today they're born. That's almost certainly because we're getting better at diagnosing it. Do you remember in your class there was a weird kid? Everybody had a weird kid in their class in elementary school. Very often today, we look at that kid and go, he's on the autism spectrum. I can think of two or three kids in my classes that clearly fit the bill. Right? Also, if you look at levels of general mental retardation, also ADHD, severe ADHD diagnosis levels, and you look at how they're going down, and then you take that amount and you add it on to autism, and you get like a perfect curve. So people are just diagnosing it better more than anything. Yeah, please.
I was just wondering, you said they have trouble understanding others' emotions and stuff.
Yeah, very much, yeah.
So do they have trouble controlling and understanding their own?
Yes.
I know the boy with the summer was 4 years old, and he would just scream everywhere all the time.
Yeah, you'll see what those of us that have autistic kids call a meltdown, which is... if you aren't used to it, it's a very frightening and unpleasant experience. It's scary because you think the kid could hurt you, could hurt himself, and usually it's because something, this is a guess, it's hard to know, but it's because something is freaking them out so much and there's nothing they can do about it. Right? And often it's a sound or it's some stimulus, or they learn that if they do that, they get their way. It's very hard to... I mean, this happened once when we were at a restaurant at Maui, downtown. And he freaked. He just freaked. And I watched Isabel sit there, and he was standing up and yelling, and she was just kneeled down, and she said, just calm down. Everything's okay. It'll be fine. But after that, he generalized to being frightened of anything from Asia. So for the longest time, he was frightened of Chinese food. He was frightened of Chinese characters, of Japanese. And I really like Asian cooking. I've got woks hanging up in our kitchen. There's steamers everywhere. There's all kinds of things that you just don't see in kitchens in North America. And I've got all this stuff. And it's like, oh, you're just going to have to get used to this because Daddy likes this stuff. And I don't use cheapo stuff. Well, the stuff I can get is cheap, but it tends to be cheap stuff that actually is all written in languages that I don't understand. It's like, oh, well, that's fish sauce. Or that's whatever, right? We had to hide a lot of those ingredients that he never see. Because the other thing is that sometimes you say, I don't want you to go into the fridge, and I wouldn't go in there because you know what's in there? Chinese food. So you can use it to your advantage. If you don't laugh sometimes about these things, sometimes you cry. Other question before I go on, because there's more stuff. But yeah, Megan.
I'm not exactly sure if it's the same disorder, but I've seen a couple. Preteens and what they hit themselves.
Yep.
Is that autism?
That can be part of autism. Yes.
Okay.
Self-injurious behavior. Okay. It's sort of the ultimate in what people call stimming, which is sort of we think self-stimulation, which is like waving your hands,
mm-hmm.
but it's just taking it a couple of steps further.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's hard to know what the cause is, though. Genetics pretty clearly play a role. I can tell you what it is not. It is not caused by vaccines. Anybody that tells you that is a lying sack of shit. No, I'll just say that to anybody. That's a lie. It's killing children when people aren't getting vaccines. Yeah.
Where did that come from? Because I've never heard of that before until you mentioned it.
It came from a doctor named Wakefield, who in 1996 did a study. Which, in fact, at the time, it had now had a lot of co-authors. It was published in the British Medical Journal. It was a prestigious, good publication. And it was 18 kids, and they all supposedly developed autism after they got their shot. Now, first of all, usually we recognize autism after the MMR vaccine because, you know, it's easy to recognize past about 18 months, and that's roughly where you get your MMR vaccine. So people have thought about it. So he did his, quote, study. It turns out that he was developing his own kind of
vaccine,
but it wasn't really a vaccine. So he had a financial interest. He was also, turns out he faked his data, so he didn't have any data. All his authors, all his friends, the co-authors, they all retracted their names. This was like, after a couple of years, other people did massive amounts of huge studies of kids and found nothing. They all went, this is wrong, we're out. And he's like, no, but of course he was, at that point, he was married to the idea. He then got the, people like Jenny McCarthy, Jim Carrey, people like this, whose PhDs are in nothing. And Jim Carrey's a little bit funny. I'll give him that. She's good at taking her top off. So what ended up happening was somebody had an interest in it. It's clearly fraud. That's been demonstrated, and I'm saying this, and that's recorded right now. Come and sue me. It's been, in fact, published in The Lancet that it was fraud. They're actually using the word fraud, which The Lancet is one of the best medical journals in the world. So it's pretty clear it was a case of fraud to self-aggrandize this guy and make himself some money. And by doing this, a lot of people stopped getting vaccines, and what's happened now is there are outbreaks of things that were gone. The mumps.
Rubella,
yeah. Mumps, measles, rubella. When I was a kid, there was no such thing as an MMR vaccine. I've had all three of those diseases, and they're no fun. The mumps is unpleasant, but you know what it's like? You know what happens when you are past puberty and you get the mumps? It's not just your face that swells up. And you can become sterile, and it can literally kill you. Because people think that their kid might get autism problems. And it's simply a lie. It's simply a lie. So we know it's not that, because it's been studied to death. Because if it was, we'd stop doing it. But it's not. But genetics, we're pretty sure, play a role. Some interesting genetic facts, for example, it's more often boys and girls. Kids of scientists are 6 more times likely to be autistic than non-scientists.
Huh?
What I just said. Kids of scientists are 6 times more likely to have autism than kids of non-scientists.
More likely to actually have it, or more likely to be diagnosed because the parents see the symptoms?
Probably a little bit of that, but I wouldn't say 6 times would cause that. I'll talk about it in a second. There's actually a decent explanation for that. It's hard to say brain-wise what it is. Is it a cortical problem, hippocampal problem, amygdala, other limbic areas? All these things have been guessed at. The brain might actually have developed too quickly, so it got a little bit too big too fast. It's hard to know, and we don't really know yet. And still, it caused these things, right? One of the problems that autistic people have is what's called theory of mind. Their theory of mind, it's understanding how other people think, right? Theory of mind is, in essence, it's mind reading, but not, mind reading. It's me knowing right now roughly how you will react when I do something, and you know how I will react if I do something, or if you do something, rather. They can't do that. So one of the problems they have with emotion is understanding emotional perception, but also understanding why people are behaving that way. Why does it make you upset when I yell in the restaurant? So when my son says to me, what feeling do you have? Or what feeling is it? I explain to him, I'm angry, and he says, why? Because you just did something you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to try to make your own homemade lemonade. Don't get a lemon and a knife. It's a bad combination. You cut yourself, more citric acid.
Ouch.
Yeah. And then you put too much sugar in it, and then there's sugar all over the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. Right? So he doesn't understand how my mind works. So we have to, and again, throughout the rest of us, that's trivial. It's trivial. We just know how each other's minds work. He can't do that. He has to learn it. Which is great, because that's why it seems to me, why he now asks, what feeling do you have, and things like that. So, I mean, that bodes pretty well. So, they have trouble putting things together. So we could call this kinesthesia. That's, they can't integrate information. They have impaired affective assignment. In other words, they don't understand emotion. They can be asocial, but I think that's not understanding being social. And again, you'll see, again, this is a piece of one. But when you look more and more at the data, because it's getting studied more now, you'll see the fact that autistic kids actually are autistic adults. We do concentrate a lot on children. There's a lot of perfectly cool autistic adults out there. That it's people don't know how to... Now, it is a disorder. I'm not going to go into this whole thing about it's a different way of thinking. That's just stupid. That's like saying I have a different way of seeing. My seeing is just eccentric. You know, if I was good, they'd say I had a disorder, but I'm rich, so they say that I'm not rich. So I don't know that asocial, it's inability to deal with social situations. They want to be social. But understanding that being social isn't just watching me do something. John has a friend, Ben, who's a great kid. Ben's totally normal. And again, I don't mind using the word normal. Ben's totally normal. He comes over, and Ben understands, because Ben's known John since junior kindergarten. And John's a great foreigner. And Ben understands that John's a little bit odd, a little bit weird. But he also, when they'll play a video game, they'll play Call of Duty together, and John's really good, and he'll completely own Ben. Like, it's really kind of sad. And, he's just, you know, he's got a 20 kill streak. He's calling in nuclear strikes. And poor Ben's just hiding in the game. And John's saying, and Ben's saying, John, I don't want to play this anymore. You're too good. You're killing me. And he's going, he said, well, let's do something else. And John says, let's play Call of Duty. It's like, you see, I'm understanding. Right? Ben's a great kid. It's Kirk Gunther's son, you know, Kirk. They've extended selective attention, focusing on things to a point of ridiculousness. I used to joke that there was one upside to them having a kid with autism, because he'd say, when he was like 4 years old, look at this. And I'd go lie down and have a nap for an hour, and come back and still be looking at it. There's got to be an upside, right? But this can, instead of just selective attention, this can be then attention into strange details. Jonathan is obsessed with cars. He used to be obsessed with airplane crashes, so he'd watch airplane crashes, and then he would also learn everything he could about each crash, and he'd read the Wikipedia page of the article and learn about it.
And how old?
He was 8 when he was doing that, or 7.5. So wow. you could say to him, John, and I would pick things that I never heard him talk about. I said, what happened to Korean Airlines flight 007? He said, August 1984, Korean Airlines flight 007 took off, and he'd go through the whole thing. It was shot down by a Soviet Su-27 when venturing into Soviet airspace. Said, really? That's right, I knew that. And then he'd be like, Captain Robert Pichet, on August 24th, 2001, Air Transat flight, I don't know if your flight numbers, he can tell us if it was here. And it took off and it landed in the Azores Islands. I said, really, how many, what happened when it landed? Everybody was fine. 12 of the 16 tires in the 747 blew out. That model of 747 has 16 tires, Pat. I said, stuff. So you got lately it's cars. Then it changes for them. So here's a video. This is when he's three. This is four.
What are you gonna watch?
You see the hand shaking, hand flapping? And he's not paying attention to what I'm saying at all.
Come here, look at the TV. What's that? Yeah, what's that? Yeah, and what's this one? Yeah, what's that? Yeah. Yeah. What's that one? And it's five, that's right. What's the game called? What is the game called?
Big game.
Yeah, it's a game.
So he's doing ukulele there?
Is it hockey? Hockey. Say bye?
See, so he's not actually understanding what saying bye means there. He understood a little bit when I was pointing at them what the letters were. Now the next, I'll show you a couple other ones in a second because you'll see how this progresses. But he's at 3.5. Well, almost 4 then. Outlook, it depends really on the severity. The outlook for someone like John's actually pretty good. I know someone who is roughly at the same level at that age that he's at the Douglas University. So that's pretty cool. Some autistic people never develop linguistic skills at all. And are completely caught. Some autistic people end up in special ed programs. So John isn't, but some kids do. John's in another classroom. And some of them, will finish, some autistic people will finish high school and go on to post-secondary education. There's more and more of those folks with more supports now. And some get PhDs, and you've heard of Temple Grandin, who has a PhD in animal behavior, who is... She doesn't have Asperger's. She doesn't have the Asperger's form. She's got full-blown autism. And she found out, she always knew she was a bit different and a bit odd, but she found out herself when she was 17 years old and talking to some people at school, and she said, you know when you're thinking about something and you sort of rewind the tape and you watch it again in your head and everybody went, no? And that's when she said, really? You don't think like that? I think in pictures.
Okay, but some people that aren't autistic would think that way too, wouldn't they?
It's exceedingly, vanishingly small number of people. Very small number of people. It's also not very adaptive to think like that, because in fact it's much better to think in concepts, just think in gist. You know. Right. So now, there's another one. This is going to be John making... I think he's 7 here. You'll see different linguistic development.
So, John, what you doing?
Adding butter.
Adding butter, okay. Now what? What do you do now? Look. Are we going to put on your bagel now?
Yeah.
What are you going to put on your bagel now?
Peanut butter.
You're going to add peanut butter, yeah? Here, wipe your hands. Do you think you can do that? Gonna give it a try?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready. Don't do it. Okay.
Uh-oh. You see how now he's able to communicate with the language thing.
Thank you. It's taking a while. If you put a bit more peanut butter on the knife when you take it out of the jar, you probably have a little bit more success. You pick the jar up, that's the easiest thing to do.
So this would be 2008. So yeah, it would have been
a little bit harder, not really.
That's 7.
There's not very much left. Let's see. Here, put the knife in. Get in there deep. Yeah, it's almost empty, so. Didn't help much, did it?
It's here. A little bit better.
Sorry. Rip your hands.
You should clean the stove before leaving the room.
You did a really nice job, John. That's really good.
I'm buying the stove. Now the next one, this is this weekend. So this is in the we have sort of two rec rooms. This is sort of John's rec room. So he's sitting there playing video games. And you'll see his personality has changed a bit too, such that at this point he's you'll see him kidding around with me. You'll see him not wanting to be interrupted because he's playing a video game, which is not that different than any kid who's almost 10 years old. He hates having his picture taken.
What do you mean you don't know? What are you playing?
I don't know the words.
You know the words. What are you playing?
You can see your questions.
Yeah.
Asking the questions.
Pause the game for a second.
No.
Oh, please.
No.
Are you silly? Are you being silly?
No!
I think you are. What are you doing?
I don't want you to come down and go in here.
You don't want to come down and go in here? What does that mean?
I don't know.
You don't know. What are you doing?
What's it doing?
No, what are you doing?
I don't know.
Sure you do. What are you playing? Asking the question, not telling.
Don't ask the question.
Why not?
Because I'm. You hate me.
I hate you. What does that mean?
I don't know.
You're making jokes.
You exploded the car.
Yes, you just exploded the car.
Why do we explode cars?
You tell me. I don't play that game.
Do we sit in?
I don't know what you're talking about. Here. Hey, John, pause the game for a second.
No!
Where are you going? Are you hiding on me?
Yeah.
Is it really? It's not hiding then, is it? Where are you? Wait a second, I think I can see your hands. I wonder where John is. I think he's probably right about there, actually. Hello? What are you doing? Why are you hiding?
Because you can't see me.
I can see your arm right there. And your leg? It's really a poor, that's a piss poor job of hiding you're doing there, John. Hey, John. John. I have a question for you.
No!
Yes!
No!
My question is this. John. I have a question for you. person went.
I don't know.
You don't know?
What are you doing?
I'm talking to you. And you say, John, John, I'm going to show this video to my class.
Stop.
Why not?
So you see there that, like, now that he's almost 10, so he's not quite 10, that his behavior's changed quite a bit, and also his personality's a lot more obvious. So it used to be that unless you actually knew how to communicate with him, you couldn't. Like, if you knew how to talk to him, then you could talk back to him, but he could talk back to you a little bit. But now, you know, in fact, when we go to a restaurant, he orders his own food. You know, he reads the menu and he says, you know, say, well, we go to Fratelli's and he orders his own medium pizza. That's a big kid. Yeah. First time we were in there, I said, yeah, we'll have a, from Isabel and me and Nadla, his sister, so we'll have a large pizza and we this and that. And he said, anything else? And John goes, a medium double cheese pepperoni and a Coke? I said, you can't have Coke, caffeine. He goes, ginger ale? I said, ginger ale's fine. He said, so you want two pizzas? I said, yeah, he'll eat that medium. He said, really? I said, oh, yeah.
How is he with displays of affection? Like, if you hug him, does he readily hug you back?
Yep. Unless he doesn't feel like it, but I mean, you know, like a lot of other kids.
Especially if his friends are around?
No, I think that's true, actually, in this case.
Oh, no?
No. No, but like when I actually usually we pick him up at school and he's happy to see us and all that stuff. But if I've been away at a conference or something like that and I come to the door, he'll like yell daddy and come and hug me and be clearly happy to see me. And he's like that when Isabel's got stranger hours when I do, so she'll be out at night and then coming back because of taking classes and teaching classes and all kinds of other things. So when she comes in, he'll be all excited. When someone comes to the door, he says hello to them, and he's genuinely happy to see them. So, yeah. He wasn't always like that. I don't know if that's him developing or us teaching him that that's the way you're supposed to behave. I honestly have no idea. It's hard to say. But he does seem happy. Like, you can't fake a smile.
Yeah.
You really can't. Like, if you fake smiles, you can detect them. You can see his fake smiles, or his school pictures look like this. And I said to him, you know, I wouldn't feel bad. Mine looked like this. You're not happy getting your picture taken in school, so I don't worry about it. We never buy the school pictures. You know, it's stupid because they're never any good. So, at least the John. So we have our own pictures that we've taken. Yeah. Are there questions about autism or about him in general? You can ask. This doesn't bother me.
How does he interact with his sister? Like, is it?
It's
obviously not a normal brother-sister
relationship.
It's
not normal, but I would say that depending on the situation, he loves her boyfriend, Nathan. He's always happy to see him. He loves most of Maddie's friends. Like, he really likes them, talks about them. Another guy that she knows, Thomas, he loves Thomas. He talks about Thomas. He interacts with her pretty well. He listens to her. Like, when we go out and she has to take care of him, she has no problem getting him to bed and all that stuff. Like, he will listen to her. We went away for a couple... Isabel and I went away for, overnight, just for a little trip for ourselves, and we left John with Maddie and her boyfriend, and everything was cool, and they had a great time, apparently. And John now believes that Nathan, that's Maddie's boyfriend, invented cutting sandwiches diagonally. So, I have a butter sandwich, and he goes, you're going to cut it? And he goes, no, like Nathan! Oh... Corners. Oh, you mean diagonally? Yes, diagonally. most of the interactions the two of them have are pretty normal for two people that are 7 years apart in age, too. So you got to factor that in. But no, she's great with him. He's really good with her. I mean, like, it's not really a big issue. He's different with each member of the family, but like anybody else is different. Yeah. Other questions? Like I said, you can ask about John, or you can just ask about autism. Yeah.
How did, maybe not John because he's not quite that old yet, but how did people with autism, like, around the opposite sex?
Yeah, that's something that we've talked about. Not me and John, because he's not old enough yet to have that discussion. But it depends. I mean, I know people that are either in or going through puberty, and some of them, it's really not good. Because you have to teach them that, you know, you can't just pleasure yourself whenever you want. Because I know of someone who's like that. On the other hand, I know someone who's very cool. He's not a problem. He's just like, he's basically the same with everybody. So I think that's one case I know of. There are no data suggesting that autistic people are dangerous in that way or commit more sort of sex crimes, that kind of thing. So that's nice. It's more a matter, again, of just teaching them how to deal with those kind of feelings. I mean, of course, and as we all know in this room, it's hard enough to learn how to deal with those feelings when you're completely normal. So learning how to deal with them when, you know, you've got some whole other thing on top of just puberty. I think that'd be a challenge, but it doesn't look like it's not a huge issue with everybody. But again, it's showing people and teaching people what's appropriate, right? So it'll be saying things to them like, you know, you don't just walk up to somebody and touch them; it's just not cool. And he's smart. I just don't think he'd do that because he knows enough about how to behave in society not to do things like that now. But we'll see. But yeah, there are cases where there are people that are. Like I said, I know somebody, and that's all I'm going to say. Because we know a lot of autistic kids in town, just because we all kind of know each other. You know,
you end up at the same doctor's office and get talking, and
it's not so much that you end up at the same. There are only so many people that work with autistic kids in town, so you get to know people that way. We have money from the government each year, so John can get, frankly, away from us. Respite care. So, and then it's also for his development. So that's what the Saturday Friends group is. He goes away on Saturday, and then we get to do what we want if we have to without John. And then he gets to go out and play and have a good time, and also learn a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, his old the person he has now is great too. But the person he used to have, Sarah, was incredible. She taught him a lot. She's great. So Gail Broad from CSD. It's her daughter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Other questions?
Just one more. What about relationships when they're adults?
Yeah.
Do autistic children typically, like, high-functioning autistic children, would they get into normal relationships? Would they get married? Would they have children?
Not nearly as often. People with Asperger's do, though. Again, it's a little more difficult, but they do. I mean, it's going to be a lot more difficult, like I said, because he's weird. He's odd. Right? But there are certainly people with Asperger's, or for years there were people that were undiagnosed with these things, and they were just these kind of weird people.
Yeah.
Right? And they did okay. But, you know, yeah, he's going to have more trouble in that area than others. I think that's just a given. Yeah. That's sort of his father.
Pardon?
Sort of his father. I married my first girlfriend.
Yeah, but your first girlfriend is a very awesome lady.
She is.
So.
She is. Other questions?
Did he ever have any fetish with Thomas the Train?
Yeah.
That's like a relative thing that seems across autistic children.
Really?
Yeah.
He did for a short while, then he went back into it for a while, and he got out of it again. He was into trains in general. For a while, to the point where if we went out and you'd see a train, the level crossing there on Truck Road, and when it was gone, he'd freak out. Where'd my train go? It's like, it's not how it works. They aren't yours, dude. I'm sorry, there's very little I can do about that. And then he got into police cars lately, and then airplanes and stuff. Now he just... It's the funniest thing, though, for example, he'll... like when he's watching me play a video game, if I shoot down a helicopter in Call of Duty, it upsets him because he just loves helicopters. You shot down the helicopter! He was shooting at me! What am I supposed to do? I've got this javelin missile. I'm going to take it out! But yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry, Jeff.
Do you find if you don't have things in order, like Russ was talking about, for breakfast, some autistic children, if they have to have the orange juice right here and then eat their food, can actually things are out of order if you get upset?
He does have a bit of that. It's not nearly as much as you hear about. I don't know if that's a real thing. But with him, he likes to only eat the same thing every day. Last night, for example, we ran out of President's Choice Southern Style chicken strips. So we only had regular ones, and he got very upset with that. And he wouldn't eat the other three with the regular ones. I said, fine, that's all you're having then. I'll eat them. So I just ate them, and I ate my dinner. And he was hungry again. I said, well, you had a chance, son. But that may just be his taste to a lot of kids like that. So I don't know. I mean, I think he's not so severe that way as far as patterns. We do try to keep things pretty steady. He goes to bed at the same time every night. He has a bath first, and he goes to bed at the same time every night. The schedule stuff's pretty important today, and schedules are pretty important for 10-year-olds. But yeah, I mean, it's not like you would have seen Sam Rain Man. You know, it's Thursday, they're going to have fish sticks. Yeah. He's not like that. If every day was either roast chicken or pizza or burgers, he'd be pretty pleased. You know, or spare old ribs. Yeah. I've seen him eat a whole rack of ribs. He's a machine. He can eat a machine with something he likes. But yeah, he doesn't have that issue. But others do. The only thing is he likes his glass of water on the table right at the edge. And so he moved that and he goes, no! I'm going to move it! Because you're going to knock it over. You know? And then he always looks at me with this funny little smile and goes, if I knock it over, yep, I'll get in. And his other thing lately is he asks absurd questions. So he says things like, do baby birds sleep with pillows? No! What kind of question is that? Do we put hats on stars? How big would this hat be, and why would it not burst into flame? So he's been asking that, and he just finds them uproariously funny. Just like he finds doing math incorrectly funny. You know, what's 6 plus 3? He goes, 27. It's like, see, you need new writers. It's not funny. All right, anything else?
I think about as much as I could take. I have been a feeling that I can't break a mistake. I didn't is fine, but it's already been one. Let's go. Everyone knows that they know, but I don't. Life's a whore in the show, so I'm sure. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's already been.
podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright, share alike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.broadbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.